I'll be reading James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4. Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith proceeds steadfastness. Let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing.
Good morning. This thing's loud. All right, so I woke up this morning, and my first thought was, God is good. And that's not usually my first thought. My first thought is usually something to do with something on my cell phone, or I might have a notification about something that happened before it's over the night, or something like that. That's usually my first thought, or maybe something I dreamed about. But I woke up this morning, and my first thought was, God is good. And I think that was my first thought because I'm happy to be here. It is an honor and a joy to be here with you today. I don't have that many weeks left, and I'm very sad about it. But I have fully enjoyed the internship, every opportunity that I've been given. This isn't my last chance to speak in front of you, so don't think I'm giving you like a goodbye speech. But it's been an honor. It's been amazing, especially learning from Jeff and all the conversations we've had and the way that he's helped me grow. And I'm very appreciative of the open arms that I felt every time I step into this church building. Everybody smiles at me. Everybody hugs me or shakes my hand or says good morning or says hello. And I'm greatly appreciative of that. And I hope that y'all always keep that welcoming spirit, not just with me because I'm an intern, but with everybody, because that's how we pull people in. That's how we bring people into the church. And so just keep that about you, because there's a good spirit about Conyers, and it makes me happy to be here. And I hope that you'll keep that spirit about you. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hands, because preachers don't usually do that, but I will ask you a question to start my lesson off this morning. How many of you have ever been in a place where you couldn't feel God, where you couldn't see what God was doing in your life, where when you talked to Him, it felt like He wasn't listening, and you wondered, how do I feel God? How do I feel close to God? You've been in a place where you had this deep desire to feel close to God, but you just didn't know how. Who's been there? One of the biggest problems the church faces today is that many Christians don't feel close to God. Most of us desire this feeling deeply. We think that if we could just feel close to God, that this whole daily Christian walk thing would be much easier. However, many Christians, most Christians, have no idea where to start in trying to get close to God. But I want you to understand something before we dig into how do we feel closer to God. I want you to understand that Christianity is not primarily about a feeling. This idea that Christianity is primarily about a feeling comes from the denominational world, but it's seeped into our own churches. Christianity is first and foremost about a relationship with Jesus that compels us to moral action. This begins with us committing to the daily walk with Him. That daily walk that we feel like, oh, that would be a lot easier if we could just feel close to God. We have to first commit to that daily walk. That's where the relationship begins. Romans 12, 1 and 2 tells us, I appeal to you therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. Everything that I'm going to teach you today, everything that we're going to talk about, is in this verse. And we may come back to it, but I want you to keep this verse in mind for the rest of the lesson. Everything that we're going to talk about is contained in this verse. How we should relate to God, the fact that we have to live our lives as a spiritual sacrifice, how God should transform us instead of us being conformed to the world, and how through all of that we can discern the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. All of those things are right here in this verse, and we're going to go way away from this verse throughout the rest of this lesson, but I want you to remember that it is all right here. Likewise, in Galatians 2, verse 20, we're reminded that our life no longer belongs to us. Once we're crucified with Christ in the waters of baptism, our life belongs to God, and we owe Him our service. So you see, like, that's a huge mistake that we often make. We're prideful enough to believe that our life is truly about us. We're selfish enough to believe that our life is truly about us, and it's just not. Trust me, I've been there. On that one, I'm preaching to myself as much as I'm preaching to anybody in the crowd, because we all struggle with that, with putting our own interest over the interest of others, putting our own interest over the interest of God. You know, we talked about joy all week at camp, and one of the things that really stuck with me was joy, J-O-Y, Jesus, others, yourself, in that order. And we're supposed to put God and His kingdom first, and then we put others behind that, and that's how we further God's kingdom, is by putting others before ourselves, and then ourselves come last. And it's really stuck with me. See, life's not about us, how we can feel good. Life is about what we can do to serve God and further the work of the church. We've made that daily commitment as Christians. Romans 12, 1 and 2, we've made that commitment. And so we have to live up to that. And living up to that commitment means serving God and furthering the work of His church. Galatians 4, 8 through 9, you flip over a couple of pages. It reminds us where we came from and why we should serve God. It reads, "Formerly, when you did not know God, you were enslaved to those that by nature are not gods. But now that you have come to know God, or rather to be known by God, how can you turn back again to the weak and worthless elementary principles of the world, whose slaves you want to be once more?" So it's reminding us, hey, you came from this. God rescued you from this, what it calls it, weak and elementary principles. It calls it a type of slavery. You're enslaved to sin. You're enslaved to the desires of your flesh. You're enslaved to the mechanisms of the world. God saved you from that. Jesus saved you from that. So why return? That's what Paul's saying here. He's making the big point of why would you want to go back to that? And then turn over a page and you'll see Galatians. I love Galatians, by the way. Turn over a page and you'll see in Galatians 5, 13 and 14, where Paul pleads with us to serve one another. He talks about how Jesus called us into freedom. There's Jesus calling us out of slavery into freedom again, and how we should use that freedom not for our own interests, but to serve one another. So we have to understand our life is not our own. When we make that commitment to follow Jesus, our life becomes not our own. Before we can talk about how we can get close to God, it's important to take an inventory of our own lives. Real blunt, it is impossible for you to feel close to God, to feel close to God. We are talking about a feeling here, and that's what we're about to get into. It is impossible for you to feel close to God if you are living in sin. We have to live in the love and grace and mercy of Jesus. Otherwise, we don't stand a chance of ever feeling Him, understanding what He's doing in our lives, discerning His will. We've got to live in the love and grace and mercy of Jesus, and we definitely can't live in sin. But I get it. I really do. As human beings, we have an inherent desire to feel close to those things in which we invest our time in, our family, our friends, our spouse, or for my teenagers, our boyfriend or girlfriend, our mentors. I always wanted to have a relationship with my coaches. I was a three-sport athlete. I loved sports. It was 95% of my adolescent life, my teenage life. I learned so much from those men who coached me, and I had a desire to feel close to those men who coached me. When I go home, I try to go out to eat with a couple of my coaches I had growing up, if I'm home for long enough that I get to see more than just my family. We have an inherent desire to feel close to that which we invest our time in. And so if we've made this decision to follow God, we have even more of an inherent desire to feel close to God, because if we're committing our life to Him, we definitely want to feel close to Him. We want to see what He's doing in our lives. We want to understand. We want to feel the change happening inside of us. We have those desires. But how? To me, the answer is really simple. And we're going to make it complicated in a minute. We're going to dig into this. But to me, the answer is very simple. Consistency is key. And as an athlete, that's a word that I've heard my entire life. Consistency is key. I had a baseball coach. Jeff's heard me talk about him a lot. It's not my dad. My dad was one of my coaches. But the head coach of my travel baseball team, he was my head coach for about 10 years. So we're talking 10 fall balls, 10 summer balls. 6 months a year spent listening to him lead this travel baseball team that I had. His name was Coach Claude, and he always talked about consistency. He said, I don't care if you can hit the ball over the fence one time in batting practice. I don't care if you can make an amazing defensive play or if you're the fastest person on the field. What I care about is, are you going to consistently work and produce at a level that makes me want to put you on the field? And that kind of formed who I was as a baseball player and as an athlete. Listening to him talk, we would practice for 2.5 hours, and we'd sit down in the dirt around the pitcher's mound, and he would sit on the bucket of balls, and he would talk to us for about 30 minutes after every single practice. And some of the players found it annoying. A lot of times he would say basically the same stuff. It was always talking about how you can be better in life. It never had anything to do with baseball. He might relate it back to baseball. But it was always talking about how you can do better in life. I ate it up. I loved it. It was the type of stuff that still touches me today. Conversations about hard work and taking pride in what you do. But the word he used almost every single one of those was consistency. Well, how does consistency translate to our spiritual life? Consistency in prayer, consistency in Bible study, and I think the biggest one that I'll say that is wrapped up in everything else, consistency in effort. Your spiritual life, your relationship with God, just like any other relationship, takes effort. And then the last one, consistency in obedience. And that comes from effort too, but consistency in obedience, because like I said, if we are dealing with a lot of sin issues, it's really, 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 really hard, close to impossible, to feel close to God. For many of us, growing up in the church is a hindrance in our goal of feeling close to God. And I grew up religious. I didn't grow up in Church of Christ. I did grow up religious, and so I would say this applies to me too. But many of us in this room grew up in the church. Many of us in this room grew up with this, God was always a part of our lives. Church was always a part of our lives. Church was maybe the foundation upon which our lives was built. For most of us who grew up, that's true. The Sunday to Wednesday, over and over and over again, a routine of church is the foundation on which our lives was built. Faith, Bible verses up on signs around the house. You know, you got things around the house that say, that remind us to pray, parents that are constantly talking about Jesus, especially when we're really young. It is a part of our identity. And because it's a part of our identity from the day that we're born, instead of it transforming us, we've let the world, sin, seep into who we are as Christians. Because we were never really anything other than Christians, right? Like, yes, we have that moment where we get baptized and our name's written in the book of life and we become Christians. But for a lot of us who grew up in the church, we were always that final step short, baptism short of becoming Christians. Because we basically lived our lives like Christians all the way through. Right? And yes, we have changes, and I'm not saying that we don't have sin in our lives, but I know for me personally, I was never a bad kid. I was never, growing up, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, I was never a bad kid. And faith was always a part of my life. So I was always that decision to get baptized, that understanding that was something that I needed to do short of being a Christian, but I lived like one for the majority of the first 18 years of my life. But I made, and this is what I'm talking about, I made compromise here, compromise here. This is okay. I can watch this. I can listen to this. I can say these words around these certain people. I can act better around these certain people. I need these people to feel like I'm a certain way and these people to feel like I'm a certain way. And I let sin and the world seep in to my foundational beliefs that I built my Christianity off of. And so it's hard because for many of us, we're never 360 degrees away from God. For those of us who grew up in the church, most of us never get, or 180, I guess, 180 degrees away from God, right? Most of us never fully turn our back on God and then have to turn back because of some amazing transformation. Usually it's just, okay, we get here, or we may get here. Like you understand what I'm saying? It's not because faith has always been a part of our life, we never get all the way away from God because it's a foundational part of who we are. But I think that becomes a hindrance in our goal of feeling close to God. Because He's just always been there. It's just always been a part of who we are. It's hard for us to feel a rush of emotions about hearing the gospel. Because how many times have we heard the gospel? It's hard for us to feel a rush of emotions when we sing a certain song, because how many times have we sung that song? Right? So for those of us who have grown up in the church or spent a lot of time in the church, for those of us who it's a foundational part of our identity and who we are, this can be really hard. And I know that makes up most of this room. Not all of this room, but most of this room. Reality check. If your desire is to feel close to God, it's not going to happen tomorrow. If you're not there, we're talking right now, if you're in a place where you want to feel close to God, but you don't, it's not going to happen when you wake up tomorrow. It's going to take time. For many of us, it can take weeks and even months before we begin to feel a change. That doesn't mean that change isn't occurring in our lives. It's just hard to feel it sometimes. We can't allow this to discourage us. We have to keep our goal in mind, stand firm in the love and grace of Jesus Christ, and continue to move forward. Galatians 5:1 reminds us of an important principle. It reads, "Freedom Christ has set us free. Stand firm, therefore, and do not submit again to a yoke of slavery." For freedom Christ has set us free. What's that mean? It means that Jesus freed you for the sake of you being free, because He loves you that much and He wants you to be free. It wasn't a personal motive other than He loved you. It wasn't something selfish on Jesus' part. He freed you because He loves you enough that He just wants you to be free from sin. when we resolve to do the things that we need to do to get closer to God, and this is what Galatians 5:1 is talking about. When we resolve to do the things that we need to do to get closer to God, temptation is going to hit us harder than ever. And that can be one of the most discouraging things in the world. We repent of something. We say, you know, I'm going to let this go. I'm going to stop doing this. This isn't going to be a part of my life anymore. And then we get home later that day and it's right back there. And some of us think, wow, that temptation is still there. I'm not free of it. Well, that's not true. Just because you're still being tempted doesn't mean you're not free of it. Jesus was free of all sin and was tempted by all the things that we're tempted by. Temptation does not equate to you being enslaved to that sin still or again. Temptation does not mean that the devil's got you. Temptation is just a normal part of life. But the devil understands. Satan, he's smart, and we know that. And he understands. If he can get you when you're up here, when you're determined, when you're focused, he can definitely get you when you're down here. And so he's going to come as hard as he can when you're up here, because if he can convince you that it's not worth it, if he can convince you that you're never going to be free, if he can convince you at your highest point that you can't beat whatever it is you're struggling with, you're never going to win. Not down here. So we have to remember that temptation does not equate to sin. And to stand firm. Galatians 5:1 wouldn't say stand firm if we were never going to face anything that we were going to have to stand firm in. When we'd resolve to do things that we need to do to get closer to God, temptation hits harder than ever. Satan understands that if he can get us while we're focused and while we're resolved, we don't stand a chance when we're in a season of struggle. We have to learn how to combat temptation. That's one of the steps to getting closer to God, is you have to learn how to stand up to temptation and how to stand firm in your freedom. For me, it wasn't so easy. I got baptized when I was 18 years old, June 23rd, 2016. It's been almost 3 years and a month. Many of you know I didn't grow up in the church. I grew up in churches. And when I came to the church when I was about 17, I had my questions answered. And eventually I was like, this is something that I need to do. And I got baptized. And the rest of the summer went really well. And then I left for college. And I go to a Christian college, and it's hard to find trouble at a Christian college. And I didn't really find much trouble. It wasn't so much that I was doing a bunch of really, really bad stuff. It was more that I just was dead. And I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that I had this whole support system that I had built at home that wasn't my family, right? My dad's not a Christian. My mom, at this point, wasn't a member of the church, wasn't my family. It was the people at my church back home. It was the mentors that I had and my youth minister and the families that I'd grown close to that would take me out to eat on a regular basis. That was my support system. And all of a sudden, I was an hour and a half away from them. And all those people who believed in me before and told me, Bryant, you can do this before. Voice crack. All those people who told me, Bryant, you can do this before. All of a sudden weren't there to tell me that anymore. And I struggled. And I made some decisions that hurt myself and hurt the people around me. And I lost a few people. And I just kept struggling. And I just kept struggling, and I kept struggling, and I kept struggling. And I had a really, really good roommate my freshman and sophomore year. Called him Strick. His name was Jonathan Strickland. I called him Strick. And it was one night in November, and he came in at about 10 o'clock, and I had been laying in bed like I had been for the last couple weeks before that, just watching TV or playing video games in the dark. Not really getting out, not really doing anything. I was about as close to depressed as I'd ever been, because I felt like I didn't have anybody. And he said, you have got to get up. Look me in the eyes. He said, Brian, you have got to get up and you've got to start doing something. I don't care what you do. Let's go out to eat. Let's go to Sonic, whatever. But you have got to start doing something, because if you don't start doing something, nothing's ever going to change. And I told him to go away. And then the next night, I was laying in bed and I was really, really upset with myself. And what he had been saying had been on my mind. And I just prayed. I said, God, I need your forgiveness. I haven't been focused on you. I made this commitment to you in my life. And now I've just like let it go by the wayside. I've been so caught up in getting adjusted to college and meeting new people. And hear me on this one. And Jeff will support this one. I've been so caught up in getting my ministry started that I've forgotten my personal relationship with God. And so I resolved right then and there, as I prayed for forgiveness, that I was going to be better. And I was going to push through whatever it took that I had to push through to get to that place where I saw what God was doing in my life, where when I prayed, I felt like I was actually talking to God, to where I could feel God in my life, where I could feel close to God. And I was like, it'll take a couple weeks. It took until about March. That was November. It took until about March before I can genuinely say that I started to feel God in my life, and I was doing the right things. I was reading my Bible. I was praying. I was focusing on, I was changing the way that my mind worked. I was focusing on staying away from my old vices. I was rolling. I was doing the right things. That's not to build myself up. This is just me telling part of my journey. And it honestly took until about March before I really ever felt close to God again. It takes time. James reminds us that there are benefits to the trials and temptations and low points. And there was a benefit to that trial and that temptation and that low point that I went through. And it was to learn, when you're struggling, when you don't know where God is, you got to keep pushing. You got to keep working. It begins with consistency in prayer, consistency in effort, consistency in Bible study, and consistency in obedience, because that was where I was struggling, was consistency in obedience. James tells us to take joy in them simply because it is in overcoming these difficulties that we draw closer to God. So maybe you're there today. Maybe you're where I was November of 2016. You don't feel close to God. You're struggling, right? Maybe that's where you are today. You ask the question, Brian, where do I start? You start by opening your Bible and reading. The Chronicles of Narnia are a book series by C.S. Lewis. If you've never read anything by C.S. Lewis, I'd highly recommend you read everything by C.S. Lewis. But the Chronicles of Narnia are more geared towards a younger audience. However, everything in the Chronicles of Narnia has a spiritual relation. Everything can be drawn back to the Bible. Characters represent different characters in the Bible. Things go on, but in Narnia is a fictional world that these humans are called into usually, and they visit Narnia. And there's these in the famous one, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, there's these four brothers and sisters, and they all go to Narnia and they have this adventure, and things end up really, really good, and they beat the bad guy or the bad woman, and they rule Narnia for like 15 years. And then they go back to the real world and they realize that no time has passed in the real world and they're still kids in the real world. And then a couple years later in the real world, they go back to Narnia and thousands of years have passed, and everything's different. And there's this character in A Chronicles of Narnia named Aslan. And Aslan is a lion, and Aslan is meant to represent Jesus. And nobody's seen Aslan since the kids left the first time. And the kids, they've just gotten back to Narnia, and they don't know where to go. They don't know what's going on. They've realized, okay, a lot of time has actually passed here. But they don't know what to do. And so very early in this book, they're all together in the forest, or the woods, as we would call it down here in the southeast. They're all together in the woods. And they decide, okay, we're going to sleep in this clearing one night. And so they all lay down, they go to sleep. About halfway through the night, Lucy, the youngest one, the first one who ever found Narnia, the one who had to convince everybody else that Narnia was real, the one that everybody called crazy, Lucy, the youngest, most innocent girl, wakes up. And she gets up and she walks out of the clearing into the woods just to clear her head, to get her brain to calm down. And she sees Aslan, the lion, the one that she has all the faith in the world in. She sees Aslan. And Aslan says, Lucy, I need you to go back. This is paraphrasing, but he says, Lucy, I need you to go back. I need you to wake your brothers and sisters up, and I need them to follow. Y'all all need to follow me. I'm going to take you where you need to go. I'm going to explain everything. And Lucy says, okay, okay. And she's super excited, and she goes back, and she wakes her brothers and sisters up, and she's, Peter, Edmund, Susan, I've seen Aslan. Aslan wants us to follow him. And she's super excited, and they believe her because she was right about this magical world that they entered into a few years ago. So they believe her. Okay, so they walk out into the clearing, and the other three brothers and sisters can't see Aslan. Lucy can still see Aslan. They can't see Aslan. And so they all get mad at Lucy, and they're like, why would you play a joke on us like that? And Lucy's like, no, no, Aslan is right there, I promise. And finally, the oldest brother, the one probably that has the second most faith, says, you know, she was right about Narnia in the first place. I'm just going to follow Lucy. And so, the other two fall in line because he was really the leader. And they start to follow Lucy through the woods. Now, Lucy's following Aslan, but they can't see Aslan. And so, Lucy's walking through the woods behind Aslan. And then they're walking behind Lucy. And as time passes, as the sun comes up, as they travel through these woods, one of them would see like a glint of Aslan's mane. One of them would see his tail wagging. Or one of them would hear his footprints, hear his breathing. It's a very long chapter. It's very descriptive in how they start to see different pieces of Aslan as they walk through these woods. And then, all at once, as they step out of the woods, they step onto a beach. And all at once, the three brothers and sisters see Aslan. Their belief had started to build as they were walking through, and they start to see all these different little hints that Aslan is actually there. But all at once, they see Aslan. What's all that mean? God gave you a Lucy, right? When you don't know where to go, when you don't know what to do, when you don't know where should I walk? Where should I go? God gave you a Lucy. Your Lucy is the Bible. I promise you, if you don't see what God's doing in your life, if you don't feel God, if you will just open up that book and start reading, it may not happen tomorrow. It may not happen in a week, but if you will be consistent about it, it'll come. God gave you a Lucy. Your Lucy is the Bible. When you don't know where to turn, open up that book and start following it. The Bible constantly reminds us of the importance of consistency in both the good times and the bad. It is when we are consistent in obedience, prayer, and Bible study that we truly begin to find God and feel close to Him. We have to die to ourselves every single day. And I know that that sounds hard. Every day, that's a lot of days. But it's worth it. I can promise that. James 4:8 promises that when we draw near to God, He will draw near to us. That's the whole concept of what I'm trying to get to here, wrapped up in one 12-word verse. Draw near to God, and He will draw near to you. It's a promise. But in order to draw near to God, you have to put in the effort, and you have to be consistent about that. It takes focus. Keep following your Lucy. Keep reading the Bible. Keep doing what it says. We got to keep being obedient. Life with God is abundantly worth it. Don't miss out. I don't know where you are this morning. I don't. You could be in a place where you do feel God in your life. You could be in a place where you have no idea where to turn, no idea where to look. I couldn't tell you. I don't know. What I do know is that God is here. And if you'll make a decision today to be more consistent, if you'll make a decision today to be more committed, to be more focused, God will draw near to you. Don't get discouraged if you don't feel close to God. Just keep working. God rewards hard workers, especially those who work hard in their relationship with Him. Just keep working. If you need forgiveness, if you need baptism, if you need to take that first step of obedience, consistency and obedience, you need to take that first step. Or if you need anything, just encouragement, if you need your church family to get around you and hold you up, whatever it is, I pray that you come as we stand and as we sing.